So let's see if we could open up the Chumashim to Vayikra Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Beis. This is at the very beginning of Parshas Tazria. And if you have the big blue Chumashim, then we're looking at page 276. So it says, "Vaydabar Hashem el Moshe vel Aaron leimar, Adam kiyev ba'or b'soros esel osapachas." These are different forms of soras. "Behu vel Aaron haKohen," and they're bringing him to the Kohen. "V'ra haKohen es hanega bi'or habosor," and the Kohen has to view the nega. And under certain conditions, if those conditions are met, then v'ra'o haKohen v'timei oso, and the Kohen sees the nega tzaras and he declares that it is tumah. And as a result of the fact, we have what's called tumas tzaras. Now please take note that everything seems to be contingent on the fact that the Kohen declares that it's tumah. And Rashi points this out. Why should it make, you know, so much sense logically that everything depends upon the Kohen and his declaration that it is tumah? Says Rashi, "Gzeres hakosefu." This is not something that we can necessarily understand rationally. There must be a reason for it, but it's beyond our comprehension. "She'ein tumas negoyim v'tarosam ela al pi kohen." That there's no way that you can make a person tamei, even if he has he exhibits all the phenomenon of this, shall we call it, dermatological phenomenon of tzaras, unless it was declared so by the Kohen. And on the flip side, in order to be metire a person and purify him from his contamination, you need the Kohen. It cannot work without the Kohen. Now the Rambam codifies this halacha in Hilchos Tumas Tzaras, and he writes the following: "Afal pisha kol ksherim liros negoyim." Anyone could see the nega. Maybe he's a scholar, and based on his knowledge of Hilchos Negoyim of Tara v'Tumah, he knows and he identifies this as tamei. But nevertheless, hatumah v'tara tluya b'kohen. Everything depends upon the Kohen. Without the Kohen, he's not Tom, he's
so
not
without
Tom.
Without a Kohen, you can't have someone being impure if there's no Kohenim in the Kehillah.
Absolutely.
Can he tell the Kohen the day you know?
Oh, so that's what the Rambam says. Ketzad. Kohen she'ein yodel liros. So let's say the Kohen is not a scholar. On the one hand, we need him in order to be Matami, but on the other hand, he doesn't know how to recognize tzaras. So the Rambam says we're going to have a partnership here. Hachacham ro'ehu, the scholar is going to see the omerlo, and he's going to say to the Kohen, it's like a parakeet almost, you know, you say to the parakeet something, "Polly want a cracker," and the parakeet answers, "Polly want a cracker." So that's what he happens. Omerlo, he says to the Kohen, this Chacham, "Emar, declare tameh." Va'kohen omer tameh. The Kohen intellectually just saw the phenomenon, this tzaras. He doesn't know its status, but the Chacham paskins for him that he should declare tameh. Or the Kohen might have heard something else from the Chacham, emar tar, that this is not tameh. Hakohen omer tar, and everything, all our halachas will apply. Okay, fine. So far, so good. But then the Rambam adds another point here. What if the Kohen... David, do you mind closing the door if I can show him? What if the Kohen is a katan? Okay? Now, you might think that maybe if he's a katan, he cannot participate in this process of being metame or being metire the tzaras. And not only that, I'll give you an even more extreme case, says the Rambam, oshota. The Kohen is an imbecile. He's retarded. He's mentally retarded. Hachacham omer lo, and the Chacham will tell him, and then it becomes either muskar or mukhlat. Again, those are the various dinim of Tuma Vitara with regard to Tumas Nagoyim, Negei Aguf, and everything is Beseder, says the Rambam, even though this Kohen is a Shota, but he just parrots exactly what the Chacham told him to parrot, and with that declaration of a Kohen Katan or a Kohen Shota, the Tuma Vitara is injected.
It seems then that we're not trying to even avoid Tuma Vitara. We want it. Like, you know,
I don't know. You know what, like, David?
It's a good thing to be to call.
I would reserve judgment until we have the picture, but keep in mind, you know, hold in your back pocket your observation. What we want to do today is we want to study, you know, I've become a big fan over the last half a year or so of the Halei Nachamuni, of the Tolner Rebbe. We want to study his presentation. He's very bothered by this halacha. Not necessarily for the reason, David, that you mentioned, that it seems like we have an agenda to make him tame. But he says the following, he doesn't understand. If this shota, this katan, is just simply mimicking, he's parroting what he heard from the Chacham, what meaning does that have? Meaning, you seem to be totally reliant on the Chacham. He's making the call. So let the Chacham be metame him. No, Chacham doesn't have the power to metame him. So what are you going to do? You have a katan or a shota, he's a kohen. His father's a kohen. You know the famous joke, make me a kohen, right? So, therefore, he's metame. It doesn't make any sense. Is there some sort of deeper meaning here? And maybe this forces us to really come back and swing full swing to Rashi, who opens up this whole parsha with the words Gzeiras HaKosavu, that it's some magic about the what we call Hotzah Mipiv. Now that phrase Hotzah Mipiv, meaning when you enunciate something, really derives from a whole different parsha in the Torah. That's Parshas Matos, which is the parsha of Nedarim, which opens up with the words Ishki Yafli Lindar Neder, which means that you can think a million times over that you want to become a Nazir, let's say, for example, but until you say that word already Nazir, you're not a Nazir.
That's right.
The Torah puts all the emphasis on the enunciation. Here also, in a flip side case, we have all the emphasis on the enunciation. That the magic word Tameh has to be enunciated in order for this Mitzora to be Tameh, and not only that, it's got to come from the mouth of a Kohen. Does this Kohen have any level of intelligence to recognize that indeed this phenomenon, this dermatological, pathological phenomenon, is Tzaras? Zippo. He doesn't know anything. He's a Kohen, he's a Shota. But the Torah says we need that declaration. All the power is in the enunciation of the word Tameh or the word Tahar, coming from the mouth of a Kohen. Why? Because he comes from Kahuna.
But would this be the only case of someone announcing something without being consciously aware of what he's announcing and it being valid?
I can't think of any other example in the Torah. This is really wild.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit into any of the patterns that we're classically familiar with. A person's speech is meaningful because it's an expression of his will, his decision, his intellectual endowment. But just because he said the word and everything depends upon that enunciation, he has no intellectual connection to what he's doing. He's an absolute shota. Where do we find such a thing? And although, again, we have to come back to Rashi, that's Gzeiras HaKosuv, and this is a law that at this point defies human comprehension, but we have to come up with something that we want to learn, or at least put it into some broader context about the nature of Tuma Vitara in this context. Fine. Now, what he wants to know, what would be the halacha if the Kohen, let's say, Mibli Das, he doesn't know the details of the din, he'll decide on his own that it's Tameh or Tahar. There's no Chacham involved, no one is guiding him, no one who understands the law has decided that this should be identified as Tzaras, and the Kohen on his own initiative decides to enunciate the word Tameh or Tahar.
So the Kohen doesn't really know exactly, just stumps
right,
it.
For whatever reason. You know, maybe he has a gripe against this person, so he says Tameh.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's getting paid off, so he says Tahar. I don't know.
Okay.
Would that be meaningful?
Yeah.
So he says, if you take a look at the Rambam, again, the same Rambam in Hilchos Tumas Tzaras that we quoted before Perek Tes, the Rambam says, Kohen Shetime Asatar, O Time Asatame Lo Asa Klum. That in such a case, it's meaningless. We have to know halachically that all the justifications for making him tameh or making him tar are in existence. And therefore comes out, according to the Rambam, that we have two conditions. One condition is that we know, according to the halacha and all the mechanisms that work in halacha, that this person should become tamei. All of the preconditions have come to pass, se'es, sapachas, and all the dinu. And number two, that it's a kohen who enunciates it. We can split those into two different personalities. One personality would be that of the chacham, and he looked at the tzaras, identified it as tzaras, and then the kohen enunciated the word tamei. The Kohen was not the Chacham, he's a Shota or a Katan, but he enunciated the word Tameh, and therefore the Tumah is Chal. On the other hand, if there was no process by which we're absolutely sure that halachically this individual is a Mitzorah, meaning we don't have any Chacham at all, the Kohen decided based on his own intuition that this guy is Tameh, but the Kohen doesn't know anything, then lo asa v'lo klum, it's meaningless. So again, we need two things. A, we need what's called the yedia brura, clear-cut knowledge that this person is a mitzorah. And number two, to clinch it, we need the declaration of a kohen that he is tameh. But the declaration of the kohen is not necessarily predicated on the identification of the tzaras, because this kohen himself knows nothing. Now the Pasuk says the following. Let's go back to page. What page were we on? 276?
Yeah.
Was that it? Okay, let's take a look at Pasuk Yud Gimel, which is now on page 277, I think. Correct? And here the Pasuk says, V'ra'a ha'kohen, v'hine kissa ha'tzaras kol b'sovetiras kulo, hafach lavan tahar, tahar, correct? And then it says, Lemara HaKohen, where is that? Okay, I'm not finding. Oh, here it is in Pasuk Yud Beis. It says that the Kisa Tzaras is called Ora Negev Rosh Lechol Mara Eine HaKohen. Do you see those words at the end of Pasuk Yud Beis on the top page 277? So the Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin finds that these last four words are superfluous, because we've already established early in the parasha, as we saw in Pasuk Vav, V'ra'a ha'kohen, or if you go back to Pasuk Beis, where again it says, V'huva el ha'aron ha'kohen, and then in Pasuk Gimel it says, V'ra'a ha'kohen. So why did the Torah have to repeat itself here in Pasuk Yud Beis, L'chol mara eine ha'kohen? Now, in order to appreciate the drasha of the Gemara and Daf, on Daf Lamed Daled in Sanhedrin, we have to ask the following question. What is a Kohen? Or who is a Kohen? Now obviously he was born to a Kohen. But there's another issue involved. And that is, what is his physical state of being? Because if a Kohen wants to do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, he's got to be what's called a Kohen Tamim. He can't be a Baal Mum. He can't have a blemish on his body. And for this, again, we'd have to learn a lot to figure out what constitutes a blemish on his body. Now the question becomes, okay, for the Kohen to function in the capacity of Avoda, the Beis HaMikdash, he cannot be a Balmum. And a Kohen, Sha'ovat Balmum, is Avodasa Psula. We have to throw out his Avoda and start from scratch. What about in this parasha of Tumas Negoyim? And the Gemara says the following, L'chol Mareh, L'chol mare eine ha'kohen, says the Gemara, prat l'kohen shechoshach mi'oro. That a kohen who's nebuch blind cannot function as a kohen ha'metame betumas nige haguf. And Rashi explains, oh, do you have that extra copy for Harvey? Harvey, we're going to start. She points out that as far as Tumas Negoyim is concerned, a Kohen Bal Mum is normally considered kosher. Kosher means that he has the capacity to be Matami. The only exception is, based on this Pasuk called Mare Eine HaKohen, a Kohen who's blind. So other Mumim, like, you know, a blind Kohen would be a classical case of Bal Mum, but other Mumim would not disqualify the Kohen in Tumas Negoyim. Only this one the Torah singled out. And therefore, even though this blind person under the general halach of Palmum would be kosher, the Torah specifically went out of its way to tell us that he cannot be metame. So the question is as follows. Wait a second. So what if the Kohen is blind and he can't see the nega? He doesn't have to see the nega. Who's going to see the nega? Correct, the Chacham. Because we said before, even if he's an imbecile and he knows nothing about the halachas, nevertheless, he relies on the Chacham and he parrots the Chacham who says Tameh. Here in this case, the Torah tells me that even though the Chacham is telling him it's Tameh and he's repeating and pronouncing that it's Tameh, it's not going to be Tameh. Why? Because in this case, the Mum passes him. Why? Because he is incapable of seeing. So it comes out like this, as we turn to the next page, that we need that the Kohen have the capacity, A, to see the Nega, even though he understands zilch about the Nega. Number two, he has to have the capacity to express and enunciate that it's Tameh. We also need the Kohen, the Chacham, who's going to guide him and issue the ruling that this is indeed identified as Tumas Tzaras. So as far as the Kohen is concerned, we need two things, that he can be able to speak and be able to see. But up here in the, what do they call it, the noddle, you know, he's pretty empty. Now here we have a suffix in the Minchas Chinuch. I think you all know that the Minchas Chinuch wrote the super commentary on the Sefer HaChinuch. And it's quite a phenomenal sefer. I mean, my Rebbe told me once that Reb Chaim, his grandfather, had very few sfarim in his library. He did not look into sfarim. He liked to come up with everything on his own. But one of the sfarim he allowed on his desk was the Minchas Chinuch, because he was a big fan of the Minchas Chinuch. So Minchas Chinuch asks the following question. Let's say there's a Kohen Shota, correct? And a Kohen Shota who has no knowledge, nevertheless he can be Mitame. Correct? And L'chora, in the case of a Kohen Shota, he doesn't see the Nega, and even if he would see the Nega, it's totally irrelevant, it's totally meaningless. Why? Because he doesn't know how to identify it. Correct? Oh. Nevertheless, he can be metame because he's relying on whom, as we said before, Rabosai? He's relying on the Chacham, correct? Oh. So the moment he relies on a Chacham, he declares that this is Tame, and the Mitzora is Tame. So what would be the din if that Shote is also, at the same time, a Suma, he's also blind. Okay? Oh. Do we say in such a case that he's not going to be able to determine and declare this person as a Tame? Why? Because the fact that he, in this case, is blind is totally irrelevant. Because which Re'iyah is really determining and clarifying that this is identical with the Tzaras that we have in the Torah? It's the Re'iyah of the Chacham. No, if it's Re'iyah of the Chacham, in such a case, we don't need the Re'iyah of the Kohen Tameh. And therefore, logically says, that in this case, a Kohen Suma would be okay. Can I go over that logic? Again, one more time. In the case of a Kohen Shota, we determine that this is a Tumas Tzaras based on whose psak? The psak of the Chacham. If that be the case, the Re'i of the Kohen is irrelevant. All we need is his enunciation Tameh. If that be the case, let's say that this Kohen Shota is a Suma, if he's blind. We can obviate and completely disregard the Re'iya element because we have the Re'i of the Chacham. And now let the Kohen Tameh declare that this is Tameh based on the Chacham, even though he's blind. He says, V'chein, and also, im echad ro'as ha-negav u'pikech v'rak ha-koin tzorch lo metomi tor v'vadai kosher af-suma. Even in a case where the Kohen is not a shoter, let's say he has a good mind, you know, he's intelligent, but nevertheless, he can rely on the re'iyah of the Chacham. And in that case, who cares if he's a Suma? He may be a brilliant, you know, Einstein, but
He's a Summa. What difference does it make? He's relying on the Kohen who saw it. I'm sorry, on the Chacham who saw it and identified it as Tomei. And the question is, L'chora, there's a Tosvis explicitly in Masechta Erechim who answers this question of the Minchas Chinuch. He doesn't understand why the Minchas Chinuch vacillates back and forth. The Minchas Chinuch seems to be unaware of, number one, the Me'iri. The Me'iri in Sanhedrin seems to assume that in all cases a Kohen Suma is excluded from Re'ias Negoim, meaning to be Metame, even if there's a Chacham there. And Tosfos says explicitly, L'chora, against the Minchas Chinuch. And he writes there in Dibra Maskel de Mizberile. Okay, we're not going to look at the original Tosis here, but he quotes the Tosis. He says, "Holech Tamut Chacham Yisrael veroe imo," and the word imo means that the Kohen also has to see it, whether he's a shota, whether he's a katan. So that's going to exclude the case of a Kohen who is blind. So just to summarize what we've said until now, a Kohen who cannot identify the tzaras can rely on the chacham, and he can be mitami and declare tomei, but with the only proviso that he's capable of seeing the tumas tzaras. So the re'iyah of the kohen, together with the psak of the chacham, integrates to form tumah. If on the other hand the Chacham declares it Tomei, that's not enough, you need the Kohen. If the Kohen doesn't see the Nega, then his declaration is irrelevant and it doesn't qualify. But once we have a Kohen who sees the Nega, even if he doesn't understand anything about, he doesn't know beans about Negoim, he can rely on the Chacham, and then he declares that it's Tomei, and it's Tomei. Okay.
You don't understand.
Again, what?
How are you getting a Kohen who's doing such an important part of a mitzvah? He's not going to make korbanot, is he? He's got to be trained. Levim are trained to say the truth,
right,
to do things. How can you just talk about this?
So that's what we're going to try to.
It seems absolutely.
So, Yaakov, that's what we're going to try to make some sense out of it. Right now, all we have is two words from Rashi. Rashi says, Gzeiras HaKosuv, which means, like the Paraduma, well, we have no way of understanding why the Torah says that a Kohen, and the Rambam adds, even if he's a Shotet, he knows nothing about Tumah, he declares, and only when he declares, this will become Tumi. So what the purpose, again, I still have a half hour, right? Okay, so if you give me a little more time, I'm hoping, Yaakov, to be able to try to answer your question. Okay, then we're all baffled by the same question. So we're all in the same boat. Okay. Now, there is a medrash, I don't know if you're familiar with, called Osios de Rabbi Akiva. And in that medrash, we quote Rabbi Akiva, the great Tana, as deriving conclusions from Osios, from the word, the letters of the Torah, the letters of the alphabet. And the medrash says the following. There was a competition amongst the letters as to which letter would be the first letter in the Torah. That would be a great chashivus. And amongst the contestants was the letter Tes. And the letter Tes came forward and said, look, Tes symbolizes goodness, Tov. And therefore I, says the letter Tes, am the best candidate to begin the Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers, no, I cannot write Tes at the beginning of the Torah. And why is that? Because if you open up to our parsha here in Tazria, to the section of Tzaras, you will see that when does this individual who has these manifestations become Tomei? When the Kohen declares what word? Tomei. And that word begins with a Tes. So even though Tes is the first word, first letter in the word Tov, it's also the first letter in the word Tomei. And therefore, it cannot qualify as the opening letter of the Torah. That's the Medrash in Osios de Rabbi Akiva. We don't understand the following. Again, there are deeper meanings here that are way beyond our comprehension, but on a simple level, what we don't understand mechanically is that the word Tomei that this Medrash focuses on appears in the parasha of Tumas Negoim, and specifically Nigei Haguf, when a person is determined to be a Tzaras, a Metzorah. Why? There are so many times in the Torah that the word Tameh appears in so many different contexts. A person who comes in contact with the Sheretz, the Torah says he's Tameh. A person who comes in contact with a dead corpse of a human being, that's Tumas Meses Tameh. Why are we focusing and singling out this particular parasha where the word Tameh applies? Is everybody clear on that question? Again, why did the Medrash have to focus on the word Tameh in this context when the word Tameh appears in so many different types of categories of Tumah? Okay. Now, we have a concept on Tisha B'Av. Which Megillah do we read on Tisha B'Av, my friends?
Eicha.
And we have a concept that comes from Megillas Eicha. Megillas Eicha is made up of five chapters. And each chapter begins with a different letter of the alphabet. And yet, and each chapter within it is an acrostic of... just to give you an example, not to compare them, which section in Tehillim do we recite daily that is an acrostic of all the letters minus one of the alphabet?
Ashrei,
correct? Okay. So we have a similar concept in Megillas Eicha, except for one problem. That in Megillas Eicha, the pei comes before the ayin. Even though in the alphabet, the ayin comes before the pei. And the Gemara tells us in Masechta Sanhedrin that this is an allusion to the sin that brought about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, which is the Chet HaMeraglim. Why? Hikdimu peh la'ayin. The pei represents the peh, the mouth, and the ayin represents the eye. What they did, the Meraglim were guilty of, what was the yesod, the fundamental point of their sin, they put the pair before the ayin. Okay then? So this explains why in three chapters that were authored by Yirmiyahu HaNavi, he starts with the pair, before the ayin, and reverses the sequence of the alphabet. What does this mean? Why do we say that the sin of the Meraglim and their guilt is because Hikdimu Peh La'ayin? The answer is as follows. When I see something and I testify, I'm looking for a different word here, when I transmit exactly what I saw without any commentary of my own, that's honest to goodness journalism. You know, that's testimony. But when I add my own interpretation, like in an editorial, that's already called peh. That's not ayin. Peh means my own take. Now, as long as the Meraglim was simply, what word am I looking for? Not testifying, but conveying. Can somebody help me with a word in English? When I need a word in English, it drives me nuts. Relating. What word am I looking for? They were just simply passing on facts. Reporting. You know, they were simply reporting what they saw. That's okay. Where is the chet of the Meraglim? When they said, again, in Bamidbar Yud Gimel, and this is Pasuk Lamed Aleph, if we have time, we'll see it inside. Lo nucha lalo sela'om. Now they give their own editorial opinion. Ki chazak hu mimenu. That's called hikdimu peh la'ayin. Now, when we speak about Lashon Hara, the yesod of Lashon Hara is written here in the parasha of Meraglim. Hotziu diba ra ala aretz. What is the yesod of Lashon Hara? Now the truth is that even if I report to you exactly what's true, if it has a pejorative negative implication, that's called Lashon Hara. But most people, when they speak Lashon Hara, what they're guilty of is ikdimu peh la'ayin. They add their own interpretation. If they bring forward the facts as they occurred, they don't achieve their goal, because there's always a possibility of what? Of being dan lekaf schus, that maybe, even though it looks a little bit suspicious, you know, why did Rav, the Gemara has in Yuma, why did he left the store and he didn't pay? Maybe he was buying on credit, if you follow what I mean. But if somebody says about Rav, Rav cheated the store owner, and he walked out with a bushel of apples and he didn't pay for it, that's called Hikdimu Pela Ayin. Everything about Lashon Hara is focused on this Avera of Hikdimu Pela Ayin. And to appreciate the meaning of this in our context today, we want to study a Gemara at the end of Masechta Yuma, which is on the bottom of your page 47. The Gemara tells us that when you want to enjoy your food, there are two ways of eating. You can eat with your eyes closed or with your eyes open. Which is the better way if you want to maximize your enjoyment from food?
Eyes open.
Keep your eyes open. To such an extent, listen carefully, the Gemara goes on, and again, I don't know the psychology, you know, you have to ask the experts on this, but this is what the Gemara tells me, so I can rely on the Gemara. The Gemara says that a blind person is really never satiated because he can't see his food. You know, God didn't clear. When I was a kid, again, I'm really dating myself. I don't know, maybe Harvey, you might be old enough to remember, but television was in black and white. Does anybody here remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Who remembers black and white anymore? You got to be like ancient, you know, prehistoric. Today everything is in color. Now the universe that God created is in color, is it not? He didn't create a black and white universe. God wanted us to enjoy the colors of the world. And the blind person, Nebuch, cannot enjoy the colors of the world. And this has a tremendous impact on his ability to enjoy food. The pleasure of food is to some extent a function of seeing the colors of the food. I don't know if you can relate to this, but my wife, when she makes a salad out of peppers, she always has a color collection of peppers. You know, you can't just buy red peppers. You got to have all the different peppers and cut them up in a certain sequence. You know, and it becomes absolutely stunning and beautiful. There are people today who go into business because they know how to arrange food in a way that it's absolutely stunning to the eye. So the aesthetic pleasure plays a major role in terms of the physical pleasure. And Nebuch, in the case of a Suma, he doesn't see his food. The Gemara goes as far as to say that if a person eats his food at night and he doesn't have lights, he's eating in the darkness. The Gemara says he's not Savea. He should be eating during the day if he wants to satiate himself. And in fact, this is codified by Shlomo HaMelech in Koheles when he says, Tov Mara Einayim Malech Nefesh, that the Nefesh enjoys the Mara Einayim, what we see. And this is, on this Gemara in Masechta Yuma, there's a fascinating comment to the Rashash. Rashash's name was Shtershon, and he lived about a century ago. And he writes that we find regarding the man an entire parsha in Baloscha which is called Kivras HaTarva, otherwise known as the Misonanim. The Misonanim are the complainers. And what were they complaining about? The man. So the Rashash says, why were they complaining about the man? Chazal tell us about the man, that whatever taste you wanted. Imagine a young child loves ice cream and he loves different flavors of ice cream. At my age, I'm looking for a good steak. But whatever you like, that's what you taste when you eat the man. So why in heaven's tarnation are they misowning him about the man? Says the Rashash, the problem with the man was that it looked the same every day. It didn't automatically convert itself to chocolate ice cream with the chocolate color on it, or vanilla ice cream that looked so snow white. But they saw the same man day after day, kizera God love on the Torah describes it. Therefore, they didn't have that extra re'ia, that power and that factor of enjoying the pleasure of the sight, and therefore they were not savea. They really didn't satiate themselves from the eating of the man. This is the significance of re'ias einayim. But my friends, the significance of sight goes way beyond everything that we've discussed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Now, if you go to an architect, I don't know, do we have any architects here? No? We need a plan, an architectural plan. Right? There are people who study for 5 years in order to learn how to make an architectural plan. Then the engineer will look at the plan and he'll be able to create that building or whatever it might be. In the case of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God doesn't need any plans. And yet, the Gemara says that there was a blueprint that was in front of God's eyes, again, Kaviyochel eyes, when he created the world. What was that blueprint? The Torah itself. Estakel Boraisa, say Chazal, Ubara Alma. Now we're on page 48 if you want to follow us. We understand that the Torah is the blueprint for the world. Correct? The blueprint for the world. You have it here?
Yeah.
Okay, great. But that makes sense in the case of a human being. A human being, because of his finite nature, he needs plans, architectural plans. But in the case of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why does he need plans? He is the infinite being, omnipotent. Man might forget exactly what to do, and therefore he needs to follow the plans. And my wife can tell you about this, and so could the other rabbis in here in the Hamak Learning Center, that you keep having to refer back to the plans before you implement them. You might forget them, you might mistake them, but in the case of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why does he need a plan? And the answer is that Istakel Boraisa, God is trying to teach us the significance of Istakel. Istakel means to see, to look. The Bria itself and everything that was created by God is an outpouring, so to speak, or an expression of Re'iyah. Everything in creation has to begin with Re'iyah, with seeing things. The significance of seeing is critical. If a person sees something and he reports what he sees, like in the case of Meraglim, that's okay. But the problem is when a person forgets about what he sees and instead he gives you his commentary, his own subjective interpretation, as the Meraglim did, that's called Hikdimu Pela Ayin. This is when man reaches that tragic Avera of Hotzas Dibara. The world was created from Re'iyah. It starts with Re'iyah. And if we are honest and loyal and genuine to Re'iyah, then everything is fine. But when, heaven forbid, we put Re'iyah on the side, and instead we put foremost and up front Peh, meaning our interpretation, that's when everything begins to go sour.
Now, what's the difference between
listakel and lirot? Listakel means to see it in depth. Lirot is to gaze superficially.
So we could say that the Kohen, if he doesn't understand with
Ro'eh,
but he wouldn't listakel, he couldn't understand what he was looking at.
If what? If he's a Shoter Katan, you mean?
Yes.
Maybe? Okay, hold on to that. That could be an interesting idea. But what we're at this crucial crossroads in this presentation. And for this you have to know a Gemara and Erechin that everybody here knows. What is the sin that causes tzaras? Lashon hara. In fact, the first
sign.
Okay, tzaras ayin too, but tzaras ayin is a little bit more common in other forms of tumah. But the classical case of tzaras, which we find in the case of Miriam, is lashon hara. And as we said earlier, lashon hara means someone who subjugates his power of re'iyah for the sake of his power of peh. In other words, he starts interpreting what he saw in a very pejorative way, casting a dark shadow over the personality of some individual. The Mitzora is punished by Tzaras because of his guilt in Lashon Hara. And what's the root of that Avera? It's that he says in his past something that he didn't see. He gives his own twist, and in this case a negative pejorative one, on what he sees. Often a person can have intuition. He can have a very strong sense of intuition. For example, you can have a case of someone who sees things that you and I don't see, meaning he recognizes intuitively. In other words, if he sees a friend of his on the way, he can tell intuitively by the way he walks what kind of meeting he's going to, what he's going to hear, or what he's nervous about being told, and other details. And in many cases, he might be right. He can predict the future based on intuition. But at the end of the day, we have to remember that he might make a mistake, and there may be exceptions to the rule, and his intuition is not reliable, because intuition is lacking re'ia. He didn't see anything. When a person puts all his emphasis on intuition, on interpretation, and he downgrades the significance of seeing, that's when we have all the problems. The Gemara tells us about Reb Shimon ben Shetach, that he once was following someone, chasing after someone who was holding on to a knife, and he thought that this man was threatening to find his victim and kill his victim. And what happened was, so Reb Shimon ben Shetach, one of the great Tanoim, is running after this guy who's got a knife. And they run into a tunnel, a dark tunnel. When they get out of the tunnel, the victim of this murder is lying dead, Nebuch, with the knife in his back. And the other guy, the murderer, is running in, you know, outside the tunnel. And Reb Shimon ben Shetach declares, I know that you're the murderer because I didn't murder him, but I can't put you to death. Why? Because I didn't see you commit the murder. Once again, we see that in the laws of testimony, everything boils down to what you can see. And this is because of the primary nature and significance of sight. If you take a look, for example, at another Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara says, Bikei Shlomo HaMelech Ladun Dinim Shebelev. There were cases in which Shlomo HaMelech had Ruach HaKodesh and he wanted to judge someone and condemn them based on what he knew to be true. But the problem is there were no Edim, there were no witnesses. Yatzasa Baskol, the Omer, the Baskol came out from Shabbat and declared, Uksiv Yosher Dvar Emes, that a Dvar Emes is not Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh is very powerful, but it's not Emes. For Emes, we need absolute knowledge based on what? Sight based on re'ia. So your Ruach HaKodesh is fine, but it's not reliable. Let's come back to the pasuk that we started with, Lechol Mare Einei HaKohen, which is on page 277, and we asked about the seemingly superficial nature or superfluous nature of that pasuk, and the answer is, as the Gemara derives in Sanhedrin, this is to exclude a Kohen who's blind. Because the Torah says, L'chol mara einei ha-kohen, he's got to be capable of seeing the nega. And why is it that it's so important that in order to be metami the mitzora, there's got to be a re'ia, that the kohen ha-metami has to be capable of seeing the nega. He has to have re'ia sainayim. And even if you'll argue that the kohen, although he doesn't have re'ia, he can invite a chacham who is an absolute expert on identifying tzaras. And we saw in the case of a katan or a shota that if the katan is incapable of identifying the tzaras, nevertheless, he can rely on the kohen. Rely again on the chacham. But here, in the case of a kohen who is blind, he cannot be metameh the tzaras. And the answer is because tumas tzaras is a punishment, midah keneged midah, measure for measure, to fit the crime. The crime that the mitzora is guilty of is the crime of not giving enough significance to re'iyas einayim, which, as we said before, could be interpreted in so many different ways, either in positive or chas v'shalom negative, and instead he gives his own editorial comment and observation, and that's what creates lashon hara. He doesn't want to give the benefit of the doubt to the person, so he jumps over the re'iyah all the way to lashon hara, to his peh. Now, when the Kohen wants to deal with this mitzora, and he wants to be metame him, the Torah says, let's reverse the process. And the Torah says that if this tumah is meant to be a punishment, and ultimately an atonement for the sin of putting down re'ia, then in the context, or in the framework of that punishment, it must be through re'ia. And therefore, we cannot be metame the Kohen, and at the end of the process, cannot be metire the Kohen, unless there's a re'ia. And if the Kohen, therefore, is blind, then that's not called re'ia. So the Torah is putting such an overemphasis on re'i, on seeing, that as far as a Kohen Katnore or a Shota is concerned, despite the fact that he has no ability of identifying this as the Simone Tumah V'Tara of Tzoras, nevertheless, he has at least the basic capability of what? Of re'i, of seeing it. He may be a Katn, he may be a Shota. He doesn't have it up here, but he has it in here in his eyes. That re'iyah is going to be enough of a re'iyah that the Torah demands as a precondition to be mitamehim. And as far as identifying the tzaras, that requirement will be fulfilled by the chacham. And therefore, the emphasis here in the parasha of tumas and re'iyas negoyim is always going to be the power of sight. Now it's interesting that when we start Gemara, then we have a tendency of going straight to the Gemara. And he says that that's a mistake. When we learn Gemara, we should really have in front of us a Chumash or a Tanakh, because we have to see the source of something. If you don't go back to its original Makar, then you really don't understand what's going on. And very often, when you learn a piece of Gemara, if you go back to the Pasuk in Chumash, he says that's when it becomes clear. Now, the difference between Chumash or Tanakh on the one hand and Gemara on the other hand is the Gemara is all up in the mind. That's called Torah Shebaal Peh. Chumash and Tanakh is Torah Shebichsav. And that all is in the eyes, in Re'iyah, just seeing the letters. And he says, therefore, the purpose of Torah Shebaal Peh is to understand that which you saw. And if you jump over the Torah Shebichsav all the way to Torah Shebaal Peh, you skip a step, then you've really done an injustice to Re'iyah. And we got to start with Re'iyah. And therefore, you will find that there are many mistakes that even creep up to the words and the writings of some of the Achronim as a result of the fact that they didn't have books. There were many Achronim who had a very limited library. You know, it wasn't like today, where you can have a massive library and you could buy books at a pittance. Back in the day, unless you were a rich guy, you couldn't buy books. And before that time, it was manuscripts, you know, 5 centuries ago, before the printing press. So you find that a number of mistakes cropped up because they didn't have the original text. And if you don't have that re'iyah, you're in trouble. And now we're up to page 50, and with this we want to come to a conclusion. And that is, of all places where the word tameh exists, and it appears in so many different contexts, with so many different types of contaminations, we find that the Medrash of Rabbi Akiva and the Osios of Rabbi Akiva focuses on this one, that the letter Tes was disqualified for the opening of the Torah because it is the first letter of the word Tameh. Because here we want to see Re'iyah. The whole purpose of Torah Shebichsav, of the written Torah, is Re'iyah. Not the Havana, the understanding, but the Re'iyah. The Kohen who's a Katan or a Shota has the capacity of Re'iyah, and therefore he qualifies to be Metameh. So this parsha in particular teaches and emphasizes the role of Re'iyah. And that's why Rabbi Akiva points out that this declaration on the part of the Kohen, Tamei, is because of Re'iyah. And Re'iyah is an absolute precondition in the Tumah that's generated by the declaration of the Kohen Tamei. In this parasha, and this parasha indicates the meaning and the significance of the letters of the Torah, the Re'iyah of the Torah Shebichsav, and therefore the test becomes disqualified. And he says that this is going to be a tremendous teaching for us in terms of our understanding of Lashon Hara, and how we have to work so hard to avoid this severe sin and save ourselves, protect ourselves from this sin. A person is not allowed to say that which he saw if it has a negative derogatory implication, but that's not the main thrust of Lashon Hara. The main problem in Lashon Hara is to say something that he didn't see and to give his own interpretation. He says, how much agmas nefesh, how much anguish would we be able to avoid if we wouldn't say things that we didn't see? That would cut down our Lashon Hara, he says, by 90%. He says, "Lo navir dvarim." We shouldn't pass on and transmit that which we think is true, based on hearsay. You know, I heard about so and so, and I'm going to pass it on to someone else. That's your classical lashon hara. He didn't see anything, but he hears a good juicy piece of negative gossip, and he passes it on. He says, "Zoi kabbalah shekal yachasid lekabel." If a person will only accept upon himself that he will never say anything unless he personally saw it, that's going to cut down his lashon hara so significantly that it'll almost completely solve the problem of lashon hara. He says, even though, again, even in cases where he transmits that which he saw, and he's very honest about it and genuine, and he doesn't falsify and deviate from the truth, it's still lashon hara. But he says that's not your classical case of lashon hara. That's the exception to the rule. The classical lashon hara, he says, is we hear something and we pass it on. It's a good piece of gossip, and it puts someone else in a negative light. That is considered lashon hara. That's the classical problem, and the gravitational pull towards lashon hara is to add something to what you heard, add something to what you saw. If we therefore will be able to be makabel, to accept upon ourselves as an absolute commitment that we'll only say that which we saw, if we'll do like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, istakel baraisu bara alma, that first God looked into the blueprint before He created, if we'll avoid the sin of the Meraglim who offered their editorial comment and interpretation that we don't have a chance to conquer Eretz Yisrael, if we won't be Magdim Apela Ayin, then we have a greater chance of achieving our goal of avoiding Lashon Hara. So again, just to summarize as we end, what we're saying is, again, it's always Gzeiras HaKosef. We'll never really be able to understand why the Kohen has to play this role, and why it's got to be a Kohen who has the capacity of seeing. As far as the deficiency, the limitation of the Kohen, that he doesn't have the intelligence to identify, that we can fill in. Who's going to be Mashlim? That's the Chacham, correct? But one thing we have to require, because the entire parasha is coming to emphasize the centrality and the significance of Re'iyah of sight. And therefore the Kohen has to have the capacity to see. Otherwise this entire process of being Metame a Mitzora has lost its point. The whole point that we're emphasizing is that the punishment for the Mitzora is going to be through Re'iyah, through seeing the Tzaras, because your crime, Mr. Mitzora, was a result of the fact that you de-emphasized or downgraded the significance of Re'iyah for the sake of Hikdim Pela Ayin, to give your interpretation, a negative one, about someone else. That Lashon Hara caused Mitzora, and therefore the Torah wants to emphasize Re'iyah. If we can be Makabel on ourselves, only to speak about that which we saw, without adding and, you know, embellishing it with different kinds of editorial comments, then in most cases, we haven't completely solved Lashon Hara, because you can still violate Lashon Hara if you say something negative and pejorative about someone, even if that derogatory statement was based on absolute truth of what you saw, it still constitutes Lashon Hara. But in most cases, so claims the Hema Yenachamuni, the real evil, or how do we say in English, magefa, the real plague of Lashon Hara, can be traced to the following source, that we add our interpretation. That's what the Meraglim did to that which we saw. If we avoid that, then we stick to that which we see, and always ask ourselves, am I transmitting that which I saw with my own eyes? Then, although again, I still have the pitfall of Lashon Hara, I haven't completely nicked it in the bud, but in most cases, I will avoid Lashon Hara. If that's the teaching of Parshas Tazria, we've gained a great deal, because ultimately the whole significance and all the psukim that we have in the Torah about Tazria, about Mitzora, is to avoid this terrible pitfall of Lashon Hara. So let's hope that we can get something out of the shir, halacha lemaisa, that we can avoid Lashon Hara, and in that sense we fulfilled the purpose of this parsha in the Torah.
Rav, can I just say something?
Yes.
That I just thought of? The whole question of the tet, what it could be the first letter. In fact, the resh was the first letter.
If what?
The resh.
Resh.
Is the first letter. The resh. Reshit.
That what again? If the reish would be the first letter.
It starts with bereish.
Oh, bereish. So, and why is reish? Because
Re'iyah.
Beautiful. The only problem with reish is that they came forward. I think it would be disqualified because of Russia. But you're saying the bet is significant because it means use. Bet means use, utilize the reish of re'iyah. Okay, not chas v'shalom, the reish of rishus of evil. Okay, very good, Doc. You could have been a darshan, I see. You know. Okay, then we'll stop here.